You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Devin Rosen. Welcome, Devin.
Hey, Eric. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. So the way we start is with the question that everybody cringes at, which is, who are you? And you can take that in any way that you wish to.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. And it's a great question. I would think that perhaps some people cringe at that because it allows them to kind of be introspective and think about themselves.
Right. And cringe carries both, can carry I want to push it away, but it's also important.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the question. And I think that it's something that it would be good for us to be thinking about and talking about probably more frequently than we're sort of given the space to.
And let me just, the reason I do the show is to help people to model visiting. Mm-hmm. How do we introduce ourselves to each other? And part of introducing ourselves to each other is telling up front fairly quickly who we are.
Right.
So that we can then have a more of a conversation and spin out what's happening, and which is an old rural, from my point of view, rural Midwestern experience of what it means to visit. And we would do that on Sunday afternoons, and my ancestors did it, and it's just a quality of conversation,
right.
and challenge, by turns challenging and exploring and all sorts of things.
Yeah. Well, it certainly is a tradition from all over the world.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true.
And it is good to get to know oneself, to get to know anybody else, and that's a prerequisite. So, so I would say that I'm a combination of kind of a really empathetic person, and that plays out in a number of different ways, both with myself and with my relationships, is that I seek a lot of connection. I tend to be really focused on connection, whether that's connection with other people that I know or don't know, connection with music, connection with the soil, with the earth, connection with myself, connection with family. And there's a certain foundation that empathy provides to kind of facilitate those connections and kind of catalyze those connections. Mm-hmm. And not just empathy for other people. Empathy for, animals, for plants, for whole social contexts. Mm-hmm. And so I find myself to be a really connected person, and I'm very, very communicative. Yeah. And I find that I seek those connections, and a lot of times I do that via communicating towards empathy and getting to know someone, but sharing myself sometimes deeply to allow the space for the other person to fill that space. So
if the depth is opening versus shutting down, it all depends on the other person.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important part of who I am, is that I'm very able to have people share and connect with me, even people that don't find they naturally do that or haven't done it with many people. And I tend to connect with people very, very quickly.
Yep. You're the person that somebody talks to when you get planted next to each other on the plane or the bus or the whatever.
Which is also cultural and familial. You know, if we grow up with that model of thinking of other people as not strangers, but other really interesting, great people that you happen to not know yet.
Yeah.
It's a different way of thinking of other people, whether they're next to you on a train or a bus or experiencing some condition on the other side of the planet. They're somebody that you don't know yet, but that doesn't mean they're a stranger.
Right. And this is the culture of curiosity as opposed to the culture of fear.
Right.
Or the culture of privacy. It's a culture of personal, what's personal but not private.
Right. And actually, that's an important distinction that maybe a little while from now we'll dig into a little bit more.
It's been a big part of my life.
Yeah.
In terms of what I've come to understand.
Mine too.
Good. So you brought some music with you.
I did.
What do you want to start with?
I think that the song I would like to start with is almost more an ode to you as it is to me. I think we should start with Soul Shakedown Party, which is Wailer's song Kind of mostly listed as Bob Marley and the Wailers. And I'll explain why after we listen to it, why it's an ode to you as much as it is to me.
Okay, well, thank you, and we'll play. Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Devin Rosen. So, Devin, you brought that song for my benefit, I guess.
Yeah, well, for both of ours. As much about me as about this, this context and
sure.
What you do. So I think Soul Shakedown Party is a great opener to anything. Concert, it happened to be the first song that the band, our friends' band, played at our wedding.
Uh-huh.
But the chorus of "This is my invitation, I have a special vacation and I need your, I need your concentration just to feel your vibration," which,
that's right.
Is a really good context about talking about being with other people. Yep. And I think that, the song sort of alludes a certain romantic sense, but, in thinking about you getting to know people and talking with people, it is a special invitation and you do need their concentration to kind of feel their vibration and talk about them with other people. So I thought that would be a nice song to kind of connect us, something that I have in my past and something that you certainly do.
And a way of doing the invitation that makes perfect sense, but I never would have thought of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how, what kinds of experiences or what in life has brought you to this awareness of the centrality of empathy? What had to happen to you, or what happened that uh-huh. helped you learn that?
That's an excellent question. I think that I best think through that as a series of experiences that have foundations in core parts of us,
mm-hmm.
Family, community, home,
mm-hmm.
self. I think that one of the experiences that really played a large part in not only who I am, but in the connections to other people, but to the world around us, the ground under us, was where I was born and how I was raised.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from the Catskill Mountains, just a little southeast of here. And I was born in the house that we lived in. From incredible parents, really brave, mother to undertake that with a midwife, way out in the mountains at, 1975.
Yep.
But what that did is that gave me a remarkable sense of place, that I was born in the spot that I slept for the first 8 years of my life. I was very quickly put into a bath of water that was from our artesian spring that I drank for the first 8 years of my life. And so having a place like that to start was a really wonderful connection to both my parents, to the place that I was mm-hmm. in, and that we happened to grow most of what we ate on that yep. spot. My parents moved to the Catskills from New York City a couple years before then, largely to join in with the kind of burgeoning organic gardening kind of community movement that was happening in the Catskills and, you know, kind of around that area at that point. And so that experience of feeling connected to the ground under me based on that we were eating mostly what we grew or at what friends' houses grew, and that kind of very ancient but very collaborative people helping each other grow things was really what I was born into.
Right.
You know, always at somebody's garden or farm, some people grew some stuff better than others, and we would share in that. And so that was a really important experience from the beginning. And that really stuck with me. We moved from there when I was 8, and that was difficult in many ways, but it had never left. You know, uh-huh. I was surrounded by water with the Willamette Creek and another tributary, and we the nearest house was, you know, 2 miles away,
right. Yeah.
And you know, kind of was able to be in that place, but that was it was fairly isolating. You
right.
know, in that, you know, I had my older brother who I'm incredibly close with, and we got to be there together, which formed our connection in a remarkable way.
Uh-huh.
But it was sort of out in the middle of nowhere. You know?
Right. I come from the generation, from almost one or two generations
mm-hmm.
before. 5 of my siblings were born at home. I was the first one who lived. There was one born in a hospital before me, but he died in a couple of days after birth. I was the first one to survive and was born in a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
My parents, you know, we raised everything that we ate. It was mm-hmm. the same sort of thing. We came out of kind of rural poverty, but we saw people trying to come back to the land at that movement at that time with similar things. It was a real kind of a grinding of the gears because what we were having to give things up that other people were beginning to affirm because it was right. hard to manage the economics.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up economics. I don't know if I want to talk about that too much right now, but growing up eating what you grow or what other people grow and sharing and trading mm-hmm. really kind of removes the money aspect
yes.
of that. Like we didn't really have money. I certainly don't remember having much money or even needing or wanting for much.
Right. And it doesn't take a lot.
And that definitely contributes to another, you know, I think important part of who I am and who I like to try to be is to have low expectations. And that can sound weird, but I guess expectations of situations, mm-hmm. you know, I'll have things that I will hope will happen or ways that people will be. But I find that if you go into a situation with a lot of expectations,
right.
it creates kind of a cookie cutter model that kind of sets you up for if it doesn't work out the way you thought, then it diminishes the experience.
Right. It diminishes you and the experience.
Yeah.
I want to come back to that
in a
minute.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell a slightly different story. I have my partner and I will watch television or movies or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she was saying to me, you know, when I watch something, I kind of intellectually identify with it, and I take things away from mm-hmm. it, and I'm kind of, you know, engaged in it. But I'm really engaging it with my mind. And I said, you know, when you watch something, you're empathizing with every character in every mm-hmm. situation, and it's like, you know, no wonder you get so kind of overwhelmed by it. There are very few. There are certain kinds of shows that I really find extremely hard to watch because the, you know, it just causes my gears to grind. And I'm sensing that you have a similar yeah. connectedness. How did you, I mean, your connection to the ground, to the land, to your family, but what other life experiences, the yeah. move in your, what happened when you were 8? Why was that move so hard?
It was hard and it wasn't hard. It was hard to first learn of, mm-hmm. but once I became more future facing on it, mm-hmm. I invested myself in that next step.
Yeah.
You know, it was happening, and there was that was the case. So
what
I found,
kind of an environment did you move to?
It was similarly wooded, just a little closer to the next town over. But my brother and I were involved with a lot of, you know, sort of extra curricular stuff. We both played a lot of instruments. We were both doing a lot of various activities, arts and nature-based. And so we lived so far from everything that it became kind of a burden to get us placed. So we moved to the next town over. So, you know, the graduating class of my first school until I was in third grade was 25 students.
You know?
And then so we moved to the big town over where the graduating class was 85, you know. So it wasn't difficult because I think I'm pretty good at taking stock in the situation that has presented itself and moving into that with the most intentional way I could think of at the time.
Right.
You know, kind of being intentional about what's ahead and, you know, learning from what was behind, but using that as a way of investing in what's ahead. But all along, I think that the core of using both of the future and the past, the real focus is to be in the present, right?
Right.
To be existing where you are at that time. And I think maybe because I had grown up in such a natural area and free from sort of any hustle and bustle, but certain, you know, any structures or anything that...
Right. Not particularly good television reception.
I had no TV at all. Until I was maybe 8 or 9. But it allows for that really kind of in the moment, you know, and a lot of nature tracking and nature education is to, you know, use what you had noticed and what patterns you had noticed and use information that's coming to you, but, you know, all to better understand the moment that you're in at the time.
And it sounds like in that transition, you learned the difference between grief, which is transitory, and being kind of locked in an emotional past, which people can't let go of. And a lot of times, empathetic folks have find a place of shared grief rather than just shared experience. And that's a huge difference, like you say, knowing the difference between the past and the future and living in the present, holding on to both.
Yeah, right. I mean, the continuum, right? That, you know, I think that we can't focus on any one of them more than the other. You know, that's why I'm a very, I really like, you know, sort of a be here now kind of focus. But I think sometimes that gets kind of clouds the importance of that to really invest yourself in the moment. You definitely have had to learn from what had happened in the past, but be able to know that what's happening in the moment is going to also affect the future.
Right.
So that, you know, I'm keeping all of that, you know, really in mind. And as you just brought up, that's an important part of empathy, you know, to understand somebody's experiencing something now, but something led to that experience and something will come from it.
And now this ties to what you were saying a bit about how you handle your hopes. And there's another kind of conversation that can happen. Sometimes we confuse optimism with hope. And optimism is really more of a rational calculation. It's kind of like a bet or an investment, which brings in money into the notion. And when it doesn't work out, then you're if you see the bet go sour, you become pessimistic.
Right.
Whereas with hope, you know, hope sits on the hope despair continuum, and the hope is more ambiguous. It's not so clear, but it's a stance towards life, and you can cultivate that stance even in the face of despair, you know, or even in the face of things that don't work out.
Absolutely. I not that I want to go too far into this, but I think that a lot of times, despair is a strong term, but that is often what breeds a focus on what can be positive. I mean, you almost need to as a survival mode.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting. You know, you brought up investment. I've been thinking that, you know, empathetic is a really good, way to be, but I think also that doesn't always translate to the people you know best. I think that those people you need to be most empathetic with. But I think there's also a certain investment that you make, and that is also something that I've held very close to who I am, is a very deep and mindful commitment and investment in my relationships, including friends. Like I tend to be very well connected with many of the friends that I've had in life, and I would say actually very well connected to the friends that I've made since I went to college. I have some very close familial friends of children of my parents' friends.
Right.
But in that move that, you know, you know, that you had brought up, that you had, you know, brought up, that I had mentioned, I had never really formed any really close connections mm-hmm, in that mm-hmm. whole window of my life.
Right.
And then I had moved to Long Island briefly with my mother after my parents had split. And that was an interesting move, too, going from the kind of the Catskills, sort of a somewhat not a lot of money around right. agricultural Catskill world to the, you know, Long Island, which was beautiful. I mean, I loved it. The beaches were incredible. But that transition to college is where I discovered the connection and the sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And that one a community that I found when I got to college was really where I think sort of exploded into this connectivity with something much, much, much larger than my family or my friend circle or where I was or who I was.
Mm-hmm. What opened in you? What changed in you at that time? Or do you remember?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember very, very clearly. Sure. Yeah. No, it's, it was musical. I've been very, as you know, all humans, as long as our species has existed, are very connected to music. I've been very connected to music my whole life. And it was something that it was always there with me, and mm-hmm. it still is. People that know me know that, like, I'm always putting music on, and I tend to be really focused on how to match the music to the mood. That's something mm-hmm. that I really mm-hmm. like a lot. But it was very specifically the introduction to and the deep listening to Phish,
mm-hmm.
The band Phish.
Sure, sure.
Which is something that we could dive into a little bit, you know, maybe after a music break.
Or, right. Do you want to go to Phish now?
No, I think we should hold on to them.
Okay.
Let's do the Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings.
So. Okay. And do you want to say anything about that?
Yeah, sure.
Not
so
before or after?
Yeah, I'll lead into it. I'll introduce it. So this is This Land Is Your Land. You know, which was made quite famous by Pete Seeger, but was a Woody Guthrie, you know, song, you know, sort of. He may have had other inspirations, but
sure.
The song really focuses on the sharing, you know, that none of us really have this. It only happens if it's all of ours. And that's why I chose somebody covering it, because music is the same thing. None of us own music. None of us really create original music. It's sort of all flowing through us from other musicians.
Copyright notwithstanding.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California, well, to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. I tell you, made for you and me. As I went walking down that ribbon of a highway, I saw the beauty of that endless skyway. Now I saw below me that
Sharon King and the Dap Kings,
yeah.
Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. I'm going to get this right sooner or later. Right. This Land Is Your Land. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Devin Rosen.
Yeah.
So Devin, you were talking about the role of community and music coming out of college and how things changed for you. What happened?
As I had mentioned, it was, kind of first really not just hearing, but experiencing a Phish concert. And I know that comes with a certain amount of loaded thinking in our sort of pop music and pop cultural milieu, but I kind of don't really pay much attention to that anyway. And so the what I had found was this kind of a sense of community that is not necessarily a present community or a geographical community. Mm-hmm. It was a sort of a large group of people that were really focused on enjoying it and experience, right? And the music was the milieu in which that experience can happen.
Right.
And I was also studying ethnomusicology at the time, which I don't think was an intentional connection, but it also was introduced a certain openness to that. We have sort of always used music making, participatory music making, as well as those that are a part of that experience of participatory music mm-hmm. making. So sure. Even those that aren't playing the instruments, as long as they're a part of that experience, providing the setting for people to both explore inside themselves as well as the connections between each other.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so, like many improvisational music making groups, whether that be improvisational jazz or, people playing Central African lift up overing, whatever it is, what I had found was that through a familiarity with the music itself, but also being comfortable in the place of the live music being made, I was very able to lose a lot of sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
And musicians explain this, athletes explain, this kind of feeling that they can get to where if they lose that sense of physicality or sense of self, they can sort of free themselves from whatever, constrained shackles that might be weighing down in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Transcendental meditation is something that I think people use for this quite mm-hmm. a bit, which my mother and uncle also practiced as I was growing up. So I had kind of this tendency towards thinking through how to let go of some of the physicality of some of ourselves to allow the internal to exist free from that.
Right. And I guess what I want to explore this because I'm not sure I'm getting it.
Mm-hmm.
Because is the loss of sense of self that you become aware of your integration into the larger whole, and you make kind of and you're kind of just being in that larger whole, or is it literally kind of a negation of the physical self, or is it a wider connection?
I think that you're spot on, but on both sides.
Uh-huh.
It's definitely a balance.
Right. I know in acting, there was a moment when I could be on stage
uh-huh.
and I could also experience the show from the audience point of view, and I could then make choices which were really in deep intimacy with the other actors.
Mm-hmm.
But so I didn't feel like I was an isolated self, but I also realized that we were playing together mm-hmm. with almost boundaryless qualities.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't thought about acting in that sense, but yeah, very much. I mean, you need to be able to put yourself into almost a selfless place, right? Mm-hmm. If you're going to be fully invested in that other role,
right.
The way I was talking about it, and I mentioned being at, at sort of that specific band's performance,
yes.
is just one of the many, 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 infinite, countless places that this gets experienced. But the experience I'm explaining is that if the music that is happening sort of sort of in the moment, a genetic mm-hmm. or it's actually being created.
It's improvisation
in that moment in front of you.
Yeah,
it frees you from any sort of knowledge of where it's going. I mean, I also play music, and people that do play music in this way, that's what they explain. That they're connected with these other people that they're playing music with, but because no one knows exactly where it's going, it frees them from the expectations or the control, and there's a release that has to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, musicians practice that, even though it's hard to switch it on and off, but you have to practice being able to let go of an expectation of where it's going to go and really open yourself to what the other people are doing. It doesn't matter if you're one of the musicians doing that. If you're at that experience, you are part of the experience. They're creating the sounds you're hearing, mm-hmm. but they're not creating what's happening in your head as a result of the sounds you're hearing.
Right. And they hold their skill, mm-hmm. but they use their skill in ways that they can't predict where it's going to go.
Right.
And that's, yeah.
And so where that scales past just a sort of an internal in your own mind, because you could put on a pair of headphones and listen to, you know, any phenomenal improvisational, you know, group of musicians, and it will do that because you don't necessarily know. But when you're at the point of creation, when you're actually in the space, especially if you're in that space with hundreds or thousands of other people.
Yeah.
Now the community that I'm talking about, it was a very interesting community, because this is a band that, you know, is better known now, but this was in the early 90s. Mm-hmm, you know, this was zero radio play,
right.
Almost zero record sales, zero promotion. Like, nobody knew at all anything about this group other than the people that happened to be really into them. And the way that propagated was sort of like the first true online community. Like, people were using these text-based Usenet groups to sort of find each other and share the tapes that they had made from the show and figure out where the band was going. I mean, there was nothing. They didn't even have a website yet, you know. And so, but the key thing is that if you're in the place where that is happening and the people that are there are also invested in the experience and the music that's being made, and it's not about, you know, the rest of the scene or, you know, any of the commerce around it. It's like completely non-commercialized at the time. It still kind of isn't. It was just a remarkable feeling to be in a place with thousands of other people who were genuinely invested in that, being in the moment and allowing the energy to be both very inwardly freeing but also outwardly connecting. And and this is just, you know, the experience that I had with this music.
Right.
But, you know, this is something that people have been experiencing as long as we've been people.
Right. Right. And I guess, this is probably language that you may not, embrace,
mm-hmm.
but what you have just described is the experience of worship, where you are both one with each other and with something that's greater than any of you. And we tend, and it's not about performance per se, it's about engagement. And this is what you have illustrated is something that, because of all of the pejorative uses of that term, we've lost what its root meaning is. You know what I'm saying?
I do. I guess I would be interested to probe you to what you think the root meaning is. I agree. There's one, that's an area I would sort of, I don't necessarily align with what you said, which is the introduction of a greater than. I don't necessarily find that to be, you use that as sort of something that you're connecting with greater than you. What I see it as, it is you.
Well, yes.
You are all
okay,
it.
Okay. And I,
it
and
is
I can,
only greater than you in the sense that you are all connected in that same way, but that connection may be something that is, it is more than you could provide on your own.
Right. And in that sense, it stands in contrast to 300 or 400 years of individualism.
Absolutely.
And that's
absolutely.
that's the sense in which I'm using the greater than, is because it stands in complete opposition.
Right.
But when you make it explicit,
right.
you make it less.
Right.
And that's.
So, and that's what I was saying, in many senses, I do agree completely, which was a feeling, a connection. Like, there was, you know, several of the native peoples in this area call it the spirit that moves through all things.
And we have it with us all the time. It's just the degree to which we are aware of it. And that is to live a life of grace, which is unselfconscious awareness and skill.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Can we take another music break?
Absolutely.
What would you like to go to next?
Well, given that we were just talking about the moment and living in the moment, I think maybe we should listen to Be Here Now by Mason Jennings.
Here we go.
Or just sit there dreaming of how life would be if we were somewhere better, somewhere far away from all our worries. Well, here we are. You are the love of my life. Be here now, no other place. All the doubts that linger, just set them free and let good things happen. Let the future come into each moment like a rising sun. You are the love of my life. You are the love of my life. Yeah, you know you are. Sun comes up and we start again. 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 Sun comes up and we start again.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Devin Rosen. So, Devin, let's come into the present.
Yeah.
and how did you get to Ithaca, and what is your life here like now?
Okay, Ithaca's had a punctuated part of my life since I was very young. I actually came here for the first time when I was maybe 6 or so, for the Suzuki violin summer camp thing up at Ithaca College. I actually have a picture of myself up on Ithaca College campus at like 5 or 6. And then, when I was, at school, after I finished my undergraduate at the University of Buffalo, I actually had, looked into, applied to, and gotten into the Finger Lakes School of Massage and had come to visit the town and was considering coming for that. And then I ended up getting invited back to go to grad school and funded and stuff. So I went to grad school. So that didn't bring me here.
Right.
But then a number of years later, I ended up coming here to do my PhD at Cornell. Communication. But really what I had studied was social networks, which is really the study of how we're connected to each other and what are the different ways that we're connected to each other, even if we don't know or see those connections, which I've thought about as an interesting sort of cognitive place for me to find a home of investigation, you know, given my personality. I came here for grad school and really loved it. I'd been at Cornell when I was 14 for their 4-H vet program. So I'd actually been, even at 14, I was like, I love this place. This is great. I couldn't really think about it as an undergraduate because of the cost, but as a graduate student, I was able to kind of get funded and I really fell in love with the area at that point. It just felt really right. It felt a lot like home. And that's a feeling that I hadn't felt for quite some time. You know, after I'd moved when I was younger, I ended up kind of, I had some friends, but I was sort of a solo person a lot, which is an odd thing to say for someone that values connection and friendship so much.
But I just pause on that a second. Many times people who value connections and the subtleties of connections have a very strong sense of the separation of self and others. In order to appreciate the connection, you almost need to that other skill of detachment. And that, I mean detachment, not non-attachment, in order to be able to kind of pull back and then emotionally or visually reconstruct those connections.
I agree. I think if there's anything that I'm not a big fan of the word truth, but if there was one that I had to plug into that, I would say is balance, that I believe very firmly in the truth of balance or that provides. And so I do identify that, and I have thought about that. And I did through what I had talked about, which was largely a musical community and traveling to see music. I had that introduced me to a very large community of very close friends that I still keep in touch with. Mm-hmm. But that still wasn't a home-like feeling.
Right.
And so to your earlier question about experiences that have changed who I am in my life, I think that I hope many people can say this, but I definitely can say that the meeting of my wife, mm-hmm. my partner, was a transformative moment. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess you could call it chance moment, but it certainly wasn't, as other events in my life have shown.
What was the moment? What was the moment? What was the transformation?
Well, the moment was just being out at the Lost Dog, with some friends, and mm-hmm. her being at the same. The transformation was the wide sort of network and net that I had cast of long held connections and commitments to. Mm-hmm. All of those light beams sort of shone into one place for the first time in my life, mm-hmm. Although I could see those sort of beams sort of gathering quickly, it takes a while for them all to turn on and for you to see them all, it led to me feeling a sense of home in a way that I hadn't since I was very, very young.
Uh-huh.
And that sort of gets to kind of the return of us to Ithaca. I mean, so I met my wife here, and then after I finished my PhD, I got a job at the University of Hawaii. And so the two of us moved to Hawaii for what we thought was going to be not necessarily a long period of time, because who knows, being 6 years. Which was a remarkable experience in many ways. For us in our relationship, it was we were just so far from who we knew and what we knew and where we knew, far from the seasons, far from the loved ones, far from all of that, allowed us a freedom of sort of exploration with each other and a certain incubation of our relationship.
Sure.
But we knew that we were not home. When we didn't have the seasons, we didn't have snow, we didn't have the moments with our family that we would normally want. It was very much not home. And then due to a fortuitous availability of a job at Ithaca College, we moved back here, and it was a great move. We didn't know where we were going to go. We knew we wanted to be back in the Northeast near family and friend. And when Ithaca kind of came up, we were just sort of like, oh yeah, like, of course, Ithaca. We had both found our way here individually. And so we both had a connection to it. And
this
we moved
is where
back.
We met.
This is where we met,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. So I've heard you describe what home is not. What is home?
Yeah. I think that, home can take on a lot of physical, which I really is an important part, but it's a place where you can feel accepted. And not by other people, but maybe by the place, by the energy of the place. And I think it's important that it's a place where other people, when they're in or at, feel that too. Actually, I was just having a conversation with my wife, and she was explaining how several people that have been to our home here have explained or shared a feeling of that how comfortable they feel and how special it feels to them due to what we've kind of created, or I guess what we've inherited, since the homestead is not, it's not a young one. But the ability for us to set down roots, and I mean that literally, to grow most of what we eat that we can grow, to plant trees that are the size of a tiny matchstick, but knowing that in 20 years it's going to be a big nut tree or a fruit tree.
Right.
To have created a place that I don't feel I've had something like, probably since I was in those like 0 to 8, 7 year range. Because from that, after that point, I was never somewhere that I felt like I was really setting down those roots, or in a place that other people could clearly feel that much home that they also felt at home.
So I'm teasing out of what you just said two concepts.
Okay.
One is home is where you can rest with a sense of safety.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to justify your existence, and in a certain sense, this is the Sabbath or Shabbat, in Jewish and Christian terms, it's where you can be without having to do work to justify yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one that comes through very clearly, it's where things kind of grow in secret. It's where you put down roots, and this growing in secret happens without our necessarily tending to it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. The setting of roots is a really, you know, it's a really, it works on so many levels.
Yeah.
And, you know, an experience that I've had recently was, not just recently, but my father coming and my mother coming and my family coming to be at our house, that, and I was talking to my dad, who I'm very, very close with, and I, you know, was one of my best friends in the world. Explaining that he was just, you know, more comfortable at our place and felt more at home than, you know, maybe he had felt anywhere since the home that we knew when I was very young.
Wow.
And that, you know, it, and my wife's family has explained the same thing, and that's where it, it's not just the place or the, you know, the kind of house, or it's clearly where we are in that place is that, you know, the connection, the connection to each other that we feel to each other as humans, to the place we are. That seems to sort of accept other people that also feel connected to us and want to feel connected to the place.
Right. Again, we're bumping up into almost another religious metaphor, and it's called a sanctuary.
Absolutely, that's a very well chosen word that we use a lot.
And the traditional wording is my home is a home to all, my sanctuary is a home to all people.
Yeah.
And that quality of openness or empathy that you have described.
A well-chosen word, actually. When we were looking for a home here, the woman that we were working with to find it, who was fantastic, asked us to try to explain what we were looking for. And all we could really come up with is that we're looking for a sanctuary.
Yep.
And it's interesting because, you know, earlier you had brought up the concept of worship.
Yes.
You know, if we stretch that before it became a loaded term, a sanctuary also is a place that that could happen. If we also stretch that before that became a sort of loaded term.
Loaded term,
and so
sure.
It's you've definitely, you know, come up, you know, seen right into it with those concepts.
What have you had to learn that has not been easy for you?
That's an excellent question. The thing that I've had to learn that has not been easy to me didn't happen directly to me.
Mm-hmm.
The balance of having and losing is something that provides us with a depth that you need both. You really need both. I'm fortunate that I've lost. Everybody's lost, but there's loss, and then there's really deep loss, that transforms everything about you. And I don't know if I had felt that other than like losing the place that I was living, you know, things like that. And this is definitely one of the things in my life that has transformed who I am and how I see the world and how I relate to people. People that are elder or whatever is a loss that my wife's family had experienced. I don't need to go too deep into it, but it was a loss that was transformative. She had lost one of her siblings, and that changes you.
Right.
That changed them.
Right.
And
right.
My wife's family, I feel really, really connected to. They have this home that is still that home. They still live in that home. They're the kind of people that, you know, as soon as they were meeting me after I met her, they were like, wow, you're so mm-hmm. fortunate you're in this home. And I feel like when you have the loss, you have a certain relationship with it. But when it's somebody that and a family you care so deeply about, that you love as much as you could love anything, have that loss, but you weren't there when it happened, that can only be felt empathetically.
Right.
And which changes that. It's changed me.
It's in when you lose a sibling or a partner or a child, it's like something has hacked off a portion of your body.
Right.
And you have to cauterize it.
Right.
But the phantom limb is there.
Right. And that's it. I think about it probably more than her or her family knows.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's with me,
mm-hmm.
because it's with her, because yeah. it's with them.
And to love her is to also
yeah,
love
right.
loss.
And so it's given me a way to appreciate life and things in a way that I hadn't, and the way that it really has helped me. And I do want to play,
let's do this right now.
Yeah, this song is called Light Years. It's by Pearl Jam. This is from a live performance on November 11th, 2011. It's about loss, but it's about using a loss to make sure that you don't let inches become light years between people.
Wow. To WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Devin Rosen. So, Devin, the way we close the show out is with your thoughts on what you do to take care of yourself, to restore yourself when things kind of come unraveled, emotionally, physically, intellectually, daily, weekly, monthly. Just what do you do, and how do you know you need to do it?
Knowing I need to do it seems to be really obvious to me. It's
well, for a lot of people, it's not.
Yeah, yeah. It's when I feel I'm not communicating with myself, or I'm not communicating with people, or I
feel. How do you see that? How do you see, what's the feedback that makes you know that?
When I'm not hearing someone and I could tell it.
Okay.
That means that there's something
Seeing their face.
There's something that's blocking my openness. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's interesting. I think that the way that I heal is very elemental. I remember when I was leaving for college, my father was driving with me up there. And as I had said, we have a really incredible connection. And he had said, you know, if you're ever feeling not right or you need something, go to water. Just go to water. And I grew up on a beautiful stream and a tributary creek next to it and surrounded by it. And fortunately, I feel remarkably fortunate to have a stream that runs right by our house and our property and a pond. But the other elements that I've found really, really healing is earth and soil. And, you know, there's actual neurochemical, you know, there's actual physiological reasons that being with soil helps us feel better. But I'll say the last thing that really has transformed me and who I am was, I don't remember what the exact meal was, although I will say food is something that is really healing for me. When my wife and I were sitting down to a meal and everything on the plate we had grown, and it was a very complex meal. Like, there was a lot going on. It wasn't just like, you know, we're having like carrot sticks, you know?
Wow.
And I remember the two of us sort of digging into this food that we had worked so hard on. And, you know, this was when we were establishing our gardens, which anybody that's done that knows that that's a much bigger undertaking than it might sound like.
Right. And this was 6 or 8 years into establishing your relationship.
Yeah. Or you know, 10 years and 9, whatever. So I've found it to be incredibly healing to, be with soil and growing. And I was going to add fire in that because I love campfires and we have a wood stove that we can see the fire now, and that's incredible. But really, and this might make sense given what we've talked about, but I don't find anything as healing as the connection and love with other people.
Right.
Those connections, when with growing or when at a musical experience or cooking food together or, you know, enjoying an incredible wine together that you had met the winemaker and you know where that came from. And there's intention. I think that for me, there has to be a lot of intention behind things. And so I find that on a daily basis, I'm healed by my ability to share with other people, and connect with other people. Right. And I find that those are the connections that allow me to better understand how to connect with myself.
Right. Life is a full contact sport.
Yeah, it's hugs and not hugs.
Right.
Yeah.
Knowing when to and when not to, and being all aware of the context.
Yeah.
Yeah. Devin, it has been wonderful to get to know you.
Yeah, thank you. You too.
So we're going to close with Fish. Do you want to introduce
them? Yeah, sure. So this is, I couldn't choose a song that would be, we don't have enough time for me to play what I'd want, but this is a song called Silent in the Morning, and it's actually going to come in out of a jam, very like a live song it is. But it's a beautiful song, and it makes me and most people that hear it think about a lovely part of their day in their life.
Here we go.
I sling the baskets off this overburdened horse. Sink my toes into the ground and set a different course. 'Cause if I were here and you were there, I'd meet you in between.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca.